Without this being the intro, I just don't know what to do.
Me neither, man. I want to woo. I want to make some weird animal noises.
I mean, I guess we could anyways. We're definitely going to put that in, and then you won't be in the rest of the intro. And I'm thinking,
was that the just It'll just be that? Him going, I'm participating,
and that's it.
That's going to be the beginning.
Yeah. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm glad you're back with us, and we're here with a special, special man from my past. His name's Bentley Anderson, and he's going to tell us a story today.
It can be your present and future, too.
He's committing to staying in my life, and I like that. I like that a lot. He's not ready to leave, but after this podcast, he may be like, David,
you just found out he was committed to staying in your life.
I haven't asked him. I didn't.
This episode is doing something for you.
Yeah.
Building relationships, or at least maintaining them.
We've had a strong one so far, and I'm glad that we're continuing down that road. All right, so I'll give us our quick breakdown here. So Bentley and I were texting, and Bentley is actually
sexting.
We were sexting a little bit. I like to send him pictures, pictures of, well,
what could have been.
Exactly. yeah, I like to blow it up so he's impressed. So basically, Bentley and I were texting. He's a longtime listener of Everything Is Okay. That was a dick joke. So we're glad you're here. He was actually...
I feel like you're going to finish everything you say with, that was a dick joke.
I wish our listeners knew how long it took us to get to this point where we could start recording.
Yeah, and we're all a little bit delirious.
We're a little crazy right now.
It's making Brad really bad at keeping us focused.
Yeah, Bentley's holding it down in Orlando right now on East Coast time, and he's like, guys... Stay with me here. Stay with me. I'm an hour into the future. We can do this. Yeah. So Bentley was texting me actually, and he had an interesting question that he was hoping that we would kind of run with here on the podcast, and it was diving into separation of church and state, and specifically looking at prayer in schools. And I'm surprised we actually haven't brought that up, because that's over the last I guess before we were born, it was kind of a big deal. And I'm hoping Bentley's going to get super nerdy and talk about some of the Supreme Court cases, potentially. No pressure. If not, I took down a little bit of notes on the background. But yeah, it's something that was actually pretty close to home for you, right? Like, your dad is actually dealing with some pushback right now in a county in Mississippi regarding prayer in schools. And yeah, so we're gonna throw it your way. Is that kind of close to what you were texting me without me reading it?
That is exactly the situation, David. This is one of those situations where I've had an academic interest in this topic for quite a while, and then it's one thing to study it, see it in the pages of books, and then it's a completely other thing to see something right there in front of you that someone's actually experiencing and struggling with. And so that's what really sparked the outreach to talk to you about that. I thought it was a pretty interesting thing to pitch.
Now, let me stop you real quick. You've had an academic interest not only in prayer in schools and church feast state, but also in our sexting relationship as well. Is that correct?
That's exactly. You hear a lot about what matters, and I think that when people address the issue of what completely matters, the word size comes up a lot.
I'm just really glad I could bring that into the table. Mom, I hope you appreciate it. All right, let's continue.
That's cute that you think your mom still listens.
Yeah, she gave up us on like episode 2. She was like, oh God, David isn't perfect. Uh-oh.
She gave up on us on my story? That hurts a little bit.
Yeah.
It was Brad that ended it.
Yeah.
That was it.
She called. She's like, I can't listen to how pathetic Brad's life is. I'm done. I'm over this. Boom.
Right. She saw Brad's explicit rating.
Well, I can't tell my mom about this
anymore. Said the word and it was over.
That's right. Once you got that explicit rating, she was done.
I can't believe you just said that. Beep that out, Brad. Beep that word out.
I know. I got to beep it out or we'll get another explicit rating.
Been a while.
Another.
All right. So, Bentley, dig a little bit deeper into the situation involving your dad. All right. So, your dad is on... Is that,
yeah,
that wasn't
funny.
I just like that you keep saying, hey, why don't you tell this story? Hold on. I'm going to do it.
No, I like to give him a jumping off point as a good host.
Not covering the whole thing.
I'm not covering the whole thing, y'all. Just because I'm a professional host
the
here.
Hostly duties.
All right,
yeah, Brad's definitely leaving this whole thing.
Yeah, Well, here's the thing: my dad serves on a local school board in Mississippi. It is a very small school district. It's the only school in the district. It's in a very rural area, very conservative, predominantly Christian. It is not uncommon for there to be prayers said before any kind of sporting event, commencement, any kind of general hangout, whatever the case may be. Federally, that's an issue, but it's never been one of those things because the overwhelming majority of the population are evangelical Christians. And if anyone does fall into that minority there, it's just either a combination of apathy or not wanting to be persecuted or feel like they're in the minority. It just, no one really complains about it.
Yeah, God forbid they make any waves, right? Because then they get taken to the town center and then stoned, correct?
That's it. That's exactly,
I mean,
what
that's
happened.
That's the worst case scenario, but I wouldn't be shocked if it did. So
there's not very many large rocks in Mississippi though, so it's more of a pebbling. It takes a long time.
It takes so long. Welcome to Everything Is Okay, Bentley. Continue.
Everything is okay. Yeah, there was an anonymous complaint from another school, actually, during a sporting event, whenever a prayer was said before the event. So, of course, the school district does have an attorney, and the attorney offers advice about what the law says, about how the board member should proceed and the kind of rules that they have. What's complicated issues a little bit, too, is that the state of Mississippi passed a law in 2013. If you ever get board, look it up, Senate Bill 2633, but it's, I believe they call it the kind of a religious freedom bill, and it goes over all these issues of under what kind of premises prayer is allowed. I think what gets lost in translation is that anytime there's a complaint about the nature of how the prayer takes place, it's easy for Christians to feel like it's a persecution of all forms of worship that happen in a public setting, in this particular case, a public school. And what they fail to realize is it's just the method of what's illegal. So no captive audiences, nothing that seems that it's school-sponsored in any way. Basically, by federal law, the only time it's ever okay is for when it's individual students and a completely spontaneous, non-sponsored, non-planned type environment.
And real quick, let me jump in. By non-sponsored or non-planned, you mean by the actual school versus like a student organization would be fine as long as it's not spearheaded by the school.
Depending on what, I guess, I don't actually know the specifics on this one, but I believe my understanding would be like if it is something like the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, then it's obvious that is the intent of that group, then absolutely. But if you had something that some other student group that isn't necessarily known for being a faith-based group, then it might get a little bit more complicated.
I always think back to the when we were in high school, when we were in junior high, we had See You at the Pole rallies at the school.
Mm-hmm. I was there every year.
Before school. So I think that's part of the loophole, is that it was technically before school.
Right. It wasn't in the school, I know.
And
it was at the flagpole, literally.
It was led by students, too, as well, right? Like, it was either students, there wasn't really a,
it
wasn't like
teacher-led
or anything like
that.
Yeah, I want to
say there was maybe a youth minister that would come in, possibly, but I may be wrong on that. It may be student-led. You might be right. Maybe that was the loophole.
But also, it was completely...
I didn't mean to interrupt, but I remember that.
No, I think it's on point, but it was completely voluntary as well, right? So before school, you didn't have to be there. It wasn't before like a football game or before a pep rally.
Right.
And nobody was required to be there.
Right, and we're talking about public school to be specific.
Right.
I know the rules change right. with private schools and Catholic schools and all that stuff.
Right. So yeah, that's the issue there is like, what do you do when you have a student population and maybe their families? This particular school is unique in that a lot of the students, their parents went to this school. And so it's a very strong sense of community there. And a very strong sense of tradition. And so people are very vocal whenever something happens or they hear about an issue that's coming before the board that they don't necessarily agree with. So it's sometimes difficult for there to be this view of the law in a way that acknowledges the purpose of the law and why they should follow it. Because the part that worries me is that it ends up becoming some sort of tyranny of the majority, but you know, of course, no one's looking at it that way when 99% of the people there think the same thing. So it's a bit of a challenge there. And so it leads me into the bigger question. When my dad was struggling with this, you know, my dad is a Christian, and but he also wanted to do what was in the best interest of the school, because if they risk signing off on some sort of a rule that says that, you know, go ahead, proceed boldly forward and pray in any form, in any content whatsoever, you risk opening up the school to potential lawsuits. It may never happen in this particular place, but you can't proceed without thinking that it could. And that's been really tough on him. Just what do you do? Do you preserve, do you protect the interest of the school, or do you preserve people's desire to pray in the public forum and in all the capacities that they want? And so it really started to, you know, like my dad's struggles, what really started to make me think about where we reconcile our faith with being a citizen. We all bring our faith to our politics and we might, you know, make decisions accordingly. But at what point do we reconcile there? When do we start bending laws in the political spectrum when they don't align with our religious beliefs? What compromises do we make in certain aspects of our faith that might not be cool or popular in the political arena? And that's just that's something I struggle with. Somebody, you know, I've studied a lot of political science and found out I was a lot more open-minded than what my upbringing would suggest. But as someone who's also trying to be strong in my faith, I realize that there's some things that make that tough.
Right.
And so that's a challenge for me. And I think that's, I'm not, you know, a unique peacock in that sense. And so that's, what do we do about that?
And I think it's interesting too, for the four of us, because we were all born in the 80s, and, prayer not being officially in school has been around since the 60s. But prior to that, it was pretty common, like apparently in the 1700s, 1800s, even the early 1900s for school to be open with either maybe a Bible reading or with prayer. And when you think about our parents' generation and then their parents would have been brought up in, at least in the public school setting, with a Bible being opened, starting class, specific prayers. And then for them to see the 60s come and have such a drastic change, I mean, I can't imagine how that was for them. And I'm sure that there was a huge uprising in the evangelical world, even in the Catholic world, when that ruling came down in the Supreme Court to get prayer out of schools, at least officially, in official capacity. Obviously, you can still pray, but
we kind of touched on this a couple episodes back. We kind of went through the history of this, and I remember we actually went through some of the court rulings, and I think that there's something that gets the thing that I can't understand about this conversation that tends to happen is when you hear it mentioned, you hear it all the time. Well, country went to hell in a handbasket when they took prayer out of schools and all that stuff. Well, here's the thing. They didn't take prayer out of schools. They took public prayer out of schools. They took it where you can't force Christianity on people who are not Christian, which to me is fair. That's more than fair. They didn't tell
exactly.
And you mentioned it, Bentley, they didn't take individual prayer out of school. Every student is allowed to sit at their desk, sit at the cafeteria table, sit on a bench, wherever they want to be, and read their Bible and pray if they want to. That no one's telling them they can't do that. Now, what they're telling them is that they can't make everyone participate in a prayer. Because I would ask these communities, and this is a common thing to say, but I would ask these communities, if you were forced to do a Muslim prayer, if you were forced to do a Buddhist prayer, if you were forced to do any of those, how would you feel about that? How would you feel about that? Because it's the same thing. So sometimes when we have this conversation, it feels like people just completely forget the fact that individually you can do that.
Right.
Like, you can have prayer if you want to. No one's told you you can't.
Well, so originally, most schools were in a church. The church seemed to be in charge of a lot of schooling. And so it naturally made sense for there to be prayer before you would start school, Bible readings, all of that sort of thing. And so that continued and was maintained as a tradition. But as it became more of a government entity, they just didn't even think about removing it. And so it makes sense to not have it be a state-sanctioned thing. There was no idea of separation of church and state applying to schools for a long time because it wasn't a state thing. It was just a church thing. But as it became a state thing, I don't feel like, especially during that time period, that it should be something that the church fought back on. Because during the 50s, 60s, 70s, the church was really big on wanting to maintain the separation of church and state. It just seems like they forgot that this is now a state organization. That's what it seems like.
Yeah, well, separation of church and state early on, it was really driven home by Christians. And actually, the Baptists had a big hand in that. And the thought was, you know, you had so many different Christian denominations that, frankly, didn't quite care for one another. And probably in the most selfish sense, were so concerned about another one getting a leg up on them. So they were all scared of being the minority. And it was easy for them to see that having a separation of church and state was good for the church and good for the state, because you're able to untangle all the negative aspects of each of them from the other, of what they can bring around. And so somewhere along the line, that's gotten convoluted, and it's been viewed as God can have no place whatsoever in a public forum. And that was not really what was supposed to happen. It was never supposed to remove the faith that people bring into the dialogue. And so it's just, it's become something ugly. And just even when Jefferson became president, the joke was that Jefferson, it was known that he was not a very strong Christian. He had some pretty harsh criticisms of the actual Christian religion, and that was used to campaign against him. In fact, one of my favorite little stories of Jefferson was that he also had the reputation for being a little bit of a ladies' man, tomcat, if you will. And so the running gag was, yeah, hide your women and your Bibles, or hide your daughters and your Bibles, because Mr. Jefferson's coming for them both. And so I think it was in 1802, Jefferson received a letter from the Danbury Baptist Association, where they were pretty much saying, hey, here's what we're worried about. You know, this is what we believe, and we want to have this kind of freedom and no entanglements with the federal government. And Jefferson responded to the letter basically saying, I agree with you. You know, that is something, you know, religion is something that's between man and his God. Something neat about Jefferson's response there, if we were to try to look up the phrase separation of church and state in the Constitution, you won't find it phrased right that way. What we have, other than the no religious test referenced in, was it Article Section 3, Article 6, I believe, so where you don't have to take any kind of religious test.
To be what? To hold office or be a right citizen, basically?
Right. But the...
Unless you're Republican.
Unless you are Republican.
Bradburn.
No, but the what we normally pay attention to is in the First Amendment. We have Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. And from that, we're supposed to draw all these conclusions. I don't like using the phrase framers' intent or getting bogged down in that kind of translation because it assumes that everyone was in agreement. That would be like, you know, taking Paul Ryan and saying that just because the Affordable Care Act passed once upon a time that he supported that. You know, there's going to be clearly people who disagree with things that ended up making it into law. So to say framers' intent isn't fair because you're not looking at what everyone who sat in that assembly believed. Instead, what we have to go by are the words that are written, how they were written, and doing the best that we can to translate what those words meant at that day. There's all sorts of different ways you can try to interpret the law, but I think that that's the one that makes the most sense.
What's interesting too, and you may have just been about to jump into this, is that I was reading up on this before we got on this call, and the Supreme Court referenced that letter from that Baptist church in Jefferson in order to make their decision on how to interpret the Constitution. And that's fascinating to me, that letter, an actual handwritten letter, was used to interpret the law.
It's crazy. It's strange how that can happen. You know, every judge, every justice can bring his or her opinions to the table and have different outside influences that determine how they move forward with the decision. And Jefferson's letter, he has the phrase separation of church and state in it when he says, religion is something between a man and his God. And agreeing with you that, you know, Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, thus creating a wall of separation between church and state. And so that's kind of become just the phrase that we use to describe that whole notion. And then what that's meant then, basically that meant exactly what it said. Congress shall make no law. It didn't really say anything about what the states could do.
Hmm.
And so ultimately, I think it was in 1947, it was Everson versus the Board of Education, where the Justice Hugo Black is who issued the opinion that changed our concept of what the wall of separation looked like, more similar to what we look at it now. He called it a wall that was high and impregnable. And on one side of that wall was the church, and on the other side of that wall was all forms of government.
What do you think he sounded like? Could you do an impression of his voice of Hugo Black, just to get our listeners into the space?
He probably sounded like a big old tool bag.
On one side of the wall.
I want to believe he was wearing a wig too. Just he had to.
I'd like to think he had more of a Muggsy thing. Just a yeah.
And he probably always wore a cape.
Yeah.
Mm. I love capes.
Oh. You can't impregnate the wall, see?
I feel like there's two sides to the question, though, because there's the separation of church and state and all of those questions that are like, what legally are Christians allowed to do as far as implementing their belief systems on other people and whatever? How are they allowed to worship? That sort of thing. The other side is, as a part of our faith, how should we interact with the state and interact with people who aren't a part of our belief system? And I feel like in the church, we get so caught up in these are what our legal rights are of implementing things that we lose sight of the Christ part of our label. I mean, Jesus didn't ever implement required worship or force people into any belief system. That's just not something that was done.
You're right. And I think something that's interesting is all throughout scripture, just trying to look into, hey, what do I need to do to be a good citizen? And just the one that always comes to my mind first is the whole, you know, given to Caesar what is Caesar's, given to God what is God's. And so that sounds pretty clean cut, but it's also, you know, there's black and white, but where's all that gray? What do we do with that gray? And I came across, it was Romans 13, just right from the top. It says, let every person be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those that exist have been instituted by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authorities resists what God has appointed, and those who resist will incur judgment.
So am I going to incur judgment because I resist Donald Trump?
It goes on to say that there are such things for, you know, we hope that our rulers are not a terror
right.
to good conduct. So I would say that...
Maybe
that,
there's a loophole in there.
Yeah, there might be some loopholes there. Basically, I mean, it eventually, you know, I think that Scripture asks us to be good citizens until the point where our citizenship asks us to betray a direct order from God.
See, I think right there is where the gray is. What the direct order from God is, because everyone has a different saying on what that is.
Yeah, everybody's God's voice sounds a little bit different.
This is the fun getting to see behind the scenes. There's a lot of David and I just saying a bunch of random crap and then saying, see how much of that you can make it get in the podcast, Brad.
Scene one, Apple, take one.
So yeah, thanks for listening to us. Make sure and check us out on everythingisokay.net. There's links to our Facebook and our Twitter on that. And if you haven't, please subscribe and review us on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast. Thanks again, and we'll catch you next time. Everything's okay, people. Suck it.
This is from the middle. This is for the middle, not the end.
This is for the middle, not the end. Did that
I really
fix
hope
it?
That whole thing just makes it in there, Brad.
I'm still recording right now.
I know you are.
Guys, give me some time for a second. So thank y'all. We're going to take this quick break just to let you know that if you haven't checked us...
Meow. Meow. Meow.
This is going to be a 15-minute recording for you to get 30-second commercials.
So we just wanted to take a break in this podcast to let y'all know that it's Bentley Anderson. That's Bentley Anderson. If you want to look him up on Google and stalk him right now. And so with that, we'll jump back into the podcast. Thank you. I thought that would be funny, guys.
You just advertised him as a person, not any
if
of the
you,
things.
If you if you'd like to order Bentley Anderson, that's 1-800 Bentley. 1-2-3-4. That works, right? You have 7 letters in your name. Oh man. So yeah, oh God. Today's episode is brought to you by us because we don't have any advertisements. Please check on www.everythingisokay.net periodically to check out what we're writing. Sometimes we put blogs up there. There's also links to all of our social media. So, you know, follow us, check in. And heck, even if you have a really good episode idea, we may ignore you, but we may not, and then bring you on the podcast. So, check it out.
Word.
Meow.
You're from Mississippi, Bentley, and we're all from Oklahoma. I'm still in Oklahoma. And we just now, I think it was yesterday, the governor signed into law. There was 10 commandments on our Capitol, right? There was a statue or whatever. It was privately donated. It had been there for a long time. A Satanistic group sued saying that they wanted to either have the statue taken down or they wanted to put up their own statue. They won. They took the they took the 10 commandments down. They put it to a vote. And in the vote, the citizens basically said, no, we don't want to allow, basically it was, we don't want to allow all statues to exist. So yeah, keep the 10 commandments away. But then Congress just recently passed a law to bring it back. I just don't get that. The scripture that also stands out to me is I've come to abolish fear. And it feels like everything is fear led. All of this. People are so worried about not having prayer in schools because of fear. It feels like we're so worried about having the right politician because of fear, and it just doesn't feel like, James, like what you said, it doesn't feel like that's what Jesus taught. I don't know, maybe I'm way off. Y'all can tell me I'm way off, but it just doesn't feel like the fight we should be necessarily getting into. It feels like we should be fighting for injustice for people, fighting for the marginalized, instead of fighting for, I don't know, a piece of granite to sit in front of a Capitol.
Yeah, you're right. And I think that a lot of this comes from a place that isn't purely Christian. And I don't mean to sound like this is passing judgment on anyone, or that I know or understand how much faith that someone has, but just that's completely an observation based on how ugly the conversations can get. Mm-hmm. They just don't sound like they're truly rooted in whatever God may want here. And that fear, I think, plays a big part in that. And whether it's maybe just a fear of everything they're seeing on the news, and just worrying about that factoring into what is otherwise their safe corner of the world, that they're starting to see the ugliness that's on the news trickle into the real world, that's their little small part of it. I don't know. But it's difficult to try to say, well, I understand this, or here's what God would want in this situation, just because I might find one scripture that seems clear as day about it, and then find something from another part of scripture that seems to be a little bit more hazy or seemingly contradict what I just read.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I'm trying to be more systematic in the approach of trying to figure out where it all comes together, and then how do you make your judgment call of interpreting everything. And it's difficult.
Yeah, our pastor at our church here in Mississippi, the way he tends to say it is that the kingdom of heaven is supposed to be a power under kingdom, where the kingdoms of the world are power over kingdoms. And so it's trying to, like, talking about how we need to submit ourselves to people and be self-sacrificing and all of that. And so in situations like this, in just a very simplified way of looking at it, I feel like if we think of it as, are we trying to have power over people in this instance? And so when it's the yes. situation of prayer in schools, or trying to make people read the Bible before class, or pray before class, or have to have the Ten Commandments out for different reasons, we are trying to have power over people. And that's not something that Jesus ever tried to do over people. He was always about submission to people. And so I feel like that's a good litmus test to how we need to interact as people. Like, absolutely work towards trying to pass laws that are things that you see as like the morality that's been laid out by God. Sure, fight for that, absolutely. But don't sidestep laws that exist to try to force your faith on other people, which is what it is to try to force right. the Ten Commandments mm-hmm. or prayer or the Bible on people. If we instead focus on right. actually trying to love people instead of trying to be over people, then maybe they don't actually care to have those things, instead of being defensive and having to feel like they're in a fight against this.
Yeah, this is that tyranny of the majority that's scary. You know, I think that this is kind of a textbook version of that. If the hearts aren't in the right place, it can easily feel like a power play. And I guess I just get curious, you know, if this are these same people that would fight so hard to preserve what they think is the attack on prayer in school, in public school, would these be the same folks who are maybe, are they praying over their families before they go to school that day? You know, are they individually going to say their prayer at school? Just how much of it is an issue of faith versus an encroachment on what they feel like is the comfort of right. their lives mm-hmm. that they have? That's frightening.
Which, right. You know, and
it's easily played out when you see, if you look at the people who are so staunch pro-life, but are so for death penalty and war, it just makes, you know, they fight to the death, no pun intended. They fight to the death on abortion, but they're also championing death penalty, and they're championing war efforts.
Right, which those are typically partnered.
Bigger military.
Yeah, you have to make abortion illegal and put more money into our military.
Right. So, I mean, you know, again, it's what are you truly fighting for? Are you fighting for life or are you fighting for anti-abortion? Because I think it's a different, I think it's a different fight, you know? And, yes. And, but we get caught up in that and we make it all the same thing.
Well, it's easy. Again, it's kind of that systematic approach there. If it's easy to pick out the parts that are convenient mm-hmm. for whatever that specific argument is. But if you're having to look at everything laid out on the table, you can't do that. It's you'll find out that there's all the contradictions. Mm-hmm. Will pop
we are notorious for having short memories, right? Me especially, since I have terrible memory. But generally, as a population, like we don't like to reflect on history and then try to apply it in general. And if you think about how this country was formulated, we love to go back to our founding fathers, do we not? Right? Like it's always like, well, what would the founding fathers do? We ran from England, who had a state religion, Church of England, that ran things because we didn't want to be persecuted. These different sects of Christianity didn't want to be persecuted, which again is, and Bentley helped me here, but like that's a huge part of why we formed this country was that for people, regardless of their religion, to not feel persecuted or put in a corner. And then what? A couple hundred years later, we're trying to I don't know if we're trying to, but it almost seems like we're trying to establish Christianity as the state religion, at least in some avenues.
Yeah. And that's scary because we do forget our history. And I think that we haven't had a reason in recent American history to see why that's a bad thing. To see that the damage it can do to both sides. I don't know what that would look like, but I just know that history tells that story for us. And I don't think
right. I would almost argue changed. We're starting to see that now.
Yeah. We may be hitting a crossroads.
We're starting to see the negative side because now you're starting to see you've got these prominent leaders of the evangelical church, right? These guys who are like on the pedestals, right? But they're backing policy. They're backing a guy who spits in their face daily, but yet they're still just like backing it. Well, what you're seeing is you're now starting to see a division. And now there was a group of people who came out condemning that recently, right? So now it's splitting and we're starting to see that we started backing power. We started backing policy. We started backing state stuff, but we weren't fighting for what Jesus stood for. And I think there's starting to be some pushback on that. And there's starting to be some people that are going, wait a minute, this is not right. This is not good. And I think we're starting to see it personally.
I hope we are, but I'm not sure that we are yet. As the people
it
who
may
are
have to get worse
it.
Before it gets better for sure.
So, yeah. And I would also push back on the idea that we are trying to implement Christianity as the state religion, because I would say that the people who are wanting to do such a thing are claiming that it has been from the beginning and they're just trying to hold on to it. It's not a, well, now we need to do this. It's, this is what it was from the beginning. The founding fathers wanted it to be that, and it's such a tight, you know, ingrained thing of nationalism and faith that I can't tell you how many times I've heard in the last week people say that, you know, we need to go back to the good Christian values and, you know, be good Christians and do what the founding fathers said. Like, wait, I thought we were Christians, not founding fatherins or whatever that would be. It's we've equated those things so tightly that now somehow following the founding fathers is following Christ, and the Constitution is the gospel for so many people. And I think that's part of where our issue is, because we've seen over and over through history that anytime there's a state religion of any sort, no matter if it's Christianity or whatever, that all wars and atrocities that are done are then the will of that God. Doesn't matter what they might have said beforehand or what their rules are. Now that this is their thing, anything done under that umbrella is now sanctioned by them. I mean, which is a lot of what we end up seeing in the Old Testament, where these horrific things that are done by Israel, and Israel's like, yeah, God told us to do that. No, he didn't. He didn't do that. Like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, that's not the character of God that we see through Jesus, but there's this umbrella claim, and that's, I feel like, where a lot of people are who are deep into the religious right and this feeling of being the moral majority, that they've stepped into this position where because being in the position we're in is being a good Christian, no matter what Trump does, it's still covered by Christianity. And that's, I feel like, where the issue we're in, that somehow people have to be snapped out of that, and I don't know what that's going to look like. I don't know if we can be snapped out of it while in the middle of it. And so I don't know if it's going to be able to be a mindset change that happens during his pregnancy, presidency.
Well, there you go, Bentley. Well, go ahead and send that to your dad and his school board, and I think that's going to bring a lot of clarity to the decision they need to make.
Well, that's what's funny. I was going to ask, you know, we're getting kind of long, but Bentley, I was curious, like, how do you see this situation playing out in this small town, you know, in this town? Like, do you think that eventually people will recognize what the federal law is, or do you think eventually they'll say, to hell with the federal law, we're
language,
sorry,
freaking
to
explicit.
Heck with the fangir.
I think that there will be an unhealthy level of disrespect to the federal law, because I think that people are aware of the state law that's out there, that Senate Bill 2633 that is just 5 years old. It's never been challenged, but I'm not really sure. I'm not confident.
And to our listeners, Bentley, that state law specifies, kind of, just to reiterate, it specifies that students can lead specific prayers at different groups. And I think that's how they think that they're sidestepping and getting real close to the Supreme Court decision, but not necessarily,
right,
you know, desecrating it or whatever.
It's tiptoeing, and it's very similar to a case that happened in Texas. It's the Santa Fe case. That was a very similar, I believe that particular instance was like a commencement. But the way that Mississippi is tiptoeing through that, or I don't want to say around it, because I don't think they are, but it's by saying that it's a pre-selected group of students who are probably going to be the student leaders. Only one person can do it at each event. They're not told by the school what they can say. And if they happen to get up there and say a prayer, then that's fine. So that's what of course, there's other sections to the bill, but that's the one that affects.
You know, what's also
interesting,
fellas, is that here in Oklahoma City at the Thunder games, they still hold prayer before each game,
right,
at the home games, at the Thunder games. Now, they probably get around it because they're a private enterprise.
Right.
They're not state-sponsored. But to my knowledge, they're the only team that does it.
I would say that as the school board, if their people are all on board with Christianity and want prayer beforehand, then that's fine, because they're supposed to be a representation of the people, right?
Right, but they also take an oath.
Right, which I understand that. But I guess I would say that the complaint was from a different school, right? And so it was people who'd come to them. So if they're just wanting prayer over the game, team, whatever, just have one of the student leaders pray over their team in the locker room before coming out. Like, if the only issue...
Now you're oppressing them.
I'm not, because the only complaint, apparently...
Well, that's what they're going to say, though.
But they won't, though, because the only opinion is of away teams, right? So if you do it all with your home group, okay. If they all submit to that, then they all submit to that. That's fine.
But we all know it's not that simple, and that there is a pomp and circumstance to it, in the sense that there's almost a... theatrical side to having a student leader.
Right. I understand the getting up in the sanctuary and praying in front of people, which was God was all about. He didn't address that.
As long as you, hey, raise your hands, man. Raise your hands during prayer.
But I'm saying that as a school board who might want to cover both bases, because you need a middle ground in this case, because it's not legal. And there are, but enough of the people that you represent want that. You have to find a way to potentially navigate both things as a school board, which is the difficult position right. to be in, which I, if I understood correctly, is kind of the question of like, what does the school board do in this instance? I mean, we had prayer led in our locker room. I don't know what happened outside before football games because I was in the locker room, but they had pastors come in and pray over the team. I don't know of any complaints that ever happened. So you
can do
that.
Didn't you used to always eat lunch or whatever at individual churches of game day or something?
Yeah. Right? For home games, away game. I don't know. One of the type games. But basically, you can have this kind of loophole to where the people who actually submit to that belief system can have their belief system fulfilled or whatever they would have it be called. But you also don't force it on the people who aren't submitting to that.
Well, so I guess my question is, even with the way our school was, what about the kids who didn't want to participate in that? Were they allowed to walk out for that?
There was never really an issue with that.
Right. Nobody did it in our school. I'm just saying, if there was, they should be allowed to walk out, right? And they shouldn't be punished for that, because as soon as they walk out and get punished, now they've taken another step there.
Yeah, and it's actually some of the Supreme Court cases actually specifically point to that, Brad, of individuals being uncomfortable or feeling pressured to be a part of it. Bentley, right. You're probably about to say something about that as well.
Yeah, if I'm remembering correctly, I think that they shouldn't have to take steps that would inconvenience themselves to remove themselves from the situation.
Well, what is that? Does that mean they can't?
Then you could have them.
I think that it would be the walkout, like if they otherwise wouldn't be walking out unless they were presented with the discomfort associated with there being
religion.
A prayer.
Yeah, being prayed over.
Yeah, and so I think, if I'm remembering that correctly.
I mean, you can just, like, when people are leaving the locker room, going to the field, you just say, okay, sidestep to this part if you want a prayer over you. If not, continue on to whatever. You know, there's things like that you could do that allow anybody that want prayer over them to have prayer over them, but you're not forcing everybody in the stands, both teams, everything, to take part in it. Because in college football games, in all high school games I've seen, after the game, both teams meet in the middle of the field and pray together. That's a thing mm-hmm. on basically all levels of football that happens. So you just figure out a way to do that kind of thing for
right.
this high school.
So far, suggestions have included bringing bullhorns and amplifiers and being able to be as loud as possible to a captive audience.
Yeah, of course. It's just finding loopholes to force people into what you believe. Because if you pray loud right. enough and aggressive enough, people will convert to a person who is all about submission of self for other people.
Right. And, you know, there was an attack on, well, if you... You know, we don't care about the brick and mortar school. We got to stand up for God. You know, that's kind of part of the argument. And my thought was, you know what? I think that you risk turning more people away from Christ than denying them that type of public prayer form that you're worried about. Because if you end up doing something that risks the closing of a school, you're risking an opportunity for all the individualized ministry that's happening from student to student or whatever the case may be. I mean, that's, in the long run, it does more harm than good. And especially if a school closes and then someone who's maybe struggling in their faith learns it was because, oh, the Christians got angry, do you think that's going to really
right.
compel them to want to be followers of Christ?
To me, saying that you have to do that on behalf of God is like, saying I punched someone in the face on behalf of a Mennonite makes no sense.
Right. Right. And so there's you know, I've heard it recently on a different topic, but it was a phrase that stuck out with me. It's that we can't just do God's work, but we have to do it God's way. And so that sometimes we can take what we think is the most noble venture and move forward with it, but we do it in a way that is completely inconsistent with God's word. And I think that, that this can be an example of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just wish I was a goth kid in this high school, and I could be the one that brought up the lawsuit against the school and make the news. Like, there's a small school in Louisiana a couple years back that ran into a similar issue, Bentley, and they had to settle with the student over the issue because it was obviously breaking Supreme Court decision. So.
Oh, there's definitely some goth kids that pop up, and I think it's probably fair to say that the closest to goth I got there were the Catholic kids.
All right, so to my Catholic goths out there, y'all know what to do. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Yeah, just Google Bentley Anderson and then follow the rabbit trail from there.
So apparently David's goal in life is to be a goth high school kid that then sues a school on behalf of their trying to force Christianity on people.
Dude, I'm just trying to support my rights, man.
That's David's bread and butter.
Just to give
right
you
there.
An idea of how strange the place can be, when I was in high school, we actually had a chapter of Amnesty International, and the president of the club went on to be a cadet at West Point Military Academy.
Hey, man, that sounds like a well-rounded student to me, Bentley.
Exactly.
I guess you could call it that.
Well, guys, kind of as we, you know, we're getting long, so like, as we kind of land this, Bentley, do you have a summation that you would want to throw on this topic?
No, just, well, thank you guys. Just as you know, I've listened. Gosh, what is it? It's been nearly 2 years now for you guys.
Wow,
and super fun, man. Impressive.
I'm glad you could come and participate.
Consistently. Yeah. Happy to participate, and it's so. I'm just you know, it's. I'm thankful that this was something that you guys thought was worth talking about in more detail. And just summing it up, it's, you know, just to say, if there was an easy solution, we wouldn't have to have the conversation. If there was an easy solution, you wouldn't have people yelling at each other in community forums, or we wouldn't have all these court cases and intricate documents of legalese from hundreds of years ago that no one can seem to truly understand anymore. There is no easy solution, and I think that if we truly want to be good citizens of the state that we live in, and I mean state in the broader sense, not necessarily Mississippi, Oklahoma, or Florida, but if we want to be good citizens, I think it still requires us to bring our faith in it. Even the founding fathers, bring it back to a little bit of that founder worship a little bit, but even some of our founders who were not avid Christians still saw the value that faith brought to, or that could bring to a society. Benjamin Franklin saw it. George Washington saw it. And so, and I don't mean that to say bring a deadness of your faith with you into the forum, you know, bring a fullness of your faith and find a way to practice it and to truly be representative of God's will and not just the misconceptions of what you think that it may mean to practice your faith and interact with others. We're called to bring as many people as we can to Christ. I think we sometimes don't find the most loving ways to do that. So I think I'll kind of just end it with that phrase that popped into my mind earlier, is that it's not enough to do God's work. We have to do it God's way.
Amen.
Yeah. I don't think you did a good enough job wrapping that up. So I wanted to add something, Bentley, but, just kidding. I love thinking about the loving your neighbor aspect of this. When it comes to multiple faiths, to being an atheist, to being an agnostic, being in a multicultural community across the United States, and realizing like us showing love to our neighbor in the broader sense is allowing them to be a part of the table. And I think that applies to our schools as well. And when we step back and realize that us sacrificing prayer in school is actually supporting different minority groups of both Christianity and other religions, and then the non-religious in a state setting, is us showing brotherly love, in my opinion. And yeah, so
you have a right to be wrong.
Yeah, I'm not, but you know, it's good. It's good to, in the words of JFK, who did a nice little video broadcast after the Supreme Court case in the 60s. This is a good opportunity for us to pray more at home amongst ourselves and amongst our families and rekindle that and challenge yourself to pray more on the individual level. So thanks, JFK.
Brad, do you have a better bow to put on that? Because David really botched it.
To our listeners who didn't think I botched that, feel free to write in. And by listeners, I mean our only listeners on the podcast right now. So Bentley, how did you like my bow on your bow? Our bows together,
co-mingling. Double bow. It will be great for me, the Virginians, and the Japan people to listen to.
Yep. Speaking of brotherly love, we love you, Japan people. And Virginia.
A little call back there.
Oh, those lovers right. In Virginia.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I just hope this isn't too painful to listen to.
That's Brad's job.
Dude, we've went through more painful topics. But Bentley, thank you so much for coming on and thank you for the idea and for being willing to stick with us. I know it's late where you are. So, man, thank you so much, and we'll have to do this again here really soon.
Yeah, thank you guys. I'm glad to be here.
All right, with that, we'll go ahead and end it. I'm Brad Stair.
I'm David Meggs.
I'm James Eisenhower.
Everything's okay, people.